Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor, and joining us right now, Steve Hutchinson. And Steve, great to be talking to you. But boy, the first thing is, looking ahead, I know for the first time you're eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, 7-time Pro Bowler. It's amazing to think the time has gone that quickly, but congratulations, and I'm sure I'll be talking in your behalf coming up when we start to go into that room right before the day before the Super Bowl.
Well, first, I appreciate it. Yeah, but you're right. You think when you retire, like, wow, that's a long time. You got to wait, start that process. But like you said, it kind of goes overnight almost. And just to be thrown in the mix right now, it's pretty exciting stuff. So it's looking forward to what potentially could happen at some point. But right now, just happy to be in the mix.
How do you look back at your career?
Well, you know, obviously being drafted in Seattle and going there in 2001 and being a part of building that program and finishing off there with my last game as a Seahawk, really in the Super Bowl against Pittsburgh. And then obviously how my situation went down going to Minnesota. I think that was, you know, obviously a big story and still is to this day when you talk about certain types of contracts, but really, then I kind of closed that chapter, started a new one in Minnesota. And honestly, I think we were kind of in a similar situation in Minnesota. It was when I got to Seattle was kind of a, you know, we were an average team. And I think, you know, Coach Childress and when Rick took over, did a good job of putting the pieces together and kind of built it. You know, he started out, and I think my first year there, we were 6-10, you know, then we go to 8-8 and then 10-6 and make the playoffs. And then the next year, obviously 12-4 and made a run and, you know, came that close to having another Super Bowl appearance, for me. And then obviously I finished up my last year in Tennessee, but, you know, I like to think that I was part of, you know, helping turn around two programs and, you know, obviously played with a lot of great guys and it definitely was a team effort. Took all the guys on the roster, but, to me, you know, I guess you always just try to get better as a player. You get better as a team. You don't want to regress. So, I think in my 12-year career, we kind of left it all out there on the field.
I tell you the amazing thing. I know for the last couple of years, I've obviously been speaking in behalf of Kevin Mawai in the Hall of Fame. And you think about, I mean, you played with him. You played with Walter Jones, who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as the first ballot. How good was that offensive line?
Well, I missed Kevin. Kevin had gone to the Jets right before I got there, if you remember. And so Kevin had gone to the Jets, I think, 2 years prior to me getting there. That's why Robbie Toback came in from Atlanta as a free agent.
Right.
But you're right. Walter, if you talk about that line, Walter and myself, Robbie, Chris Gray, and, you know, we had a little bit of some moving parts at the right tackle position. Chris McIntosh was a high pick and you know, was destined to have a great career. Just unfortunately it ended, you know, sooner than he wanted with the neck injury. And then we had, you know, guys like Chris Terry came in. We picked him up and he, you know, played for a while. And then obviously when Sean came in, we drafted him and he started for us most of that year, if not all of it, the year we went to the Super Bowl. So to have four of the five guys there for 4 years, or actually said 5 years, that's a big thing. You know, continuity in the offensive line is a big deal, and you know, nowadays you see less and less of it.
Yeah, and that's the amazing part, because I think there was one stretch where the starting line was together like about 50 games, which rarely happens anymore. But boy, I remember just talking to Walter and you about the fact that you know, communication becomes so easy when you're together that long, because, you know, everybody knows exactly what everybody's doing because they've been playing together so long.
Right. And it wasn't a big advantage. I mean, I know there were defensive linemen along the way that said, you know, defensive linemen, there's only so many calls for blocks throughout systems and offensively, like, you know, on blocking combinations, you know, most of the verbiage a lot of times is the same. So obviously when a defensive lineman hears a certain block, he knows to kind of expect what's coming on, or at least think that there's a run as opposed to a pass. And we got to the point where we knew, you know, our offense so well, we knew each other so well, that we didn't have to make calls. We would break the huddle. We kind of saw what the defense, how they were going to line, and we didn't have to say anything. So that was less of a tip, less of a signal for the defenders that were playing against us. They really had no idea.
What do you think in you that made your game so good as a blocker?
You know, I people ask me that, and I think I just pride myself on the technique. You know, when I came into the league, I had a very good offensive line coach my first 2 years in the league that was really a stickler on teaching technique. And I'll be honest with you, when I was in college at Michigan too, I had an offensive line coach that was a technician teaching coach. And so when you know, you're always going to face guys that are more athletic, quicker than you, but if you can kind of fall back and have a foundation of technique, you know, when to shoot your hands, you know, that, you know, it's silly, but you talk about, you know, an offensive line play, a step of 2 or 3 inches in the wrong direction or too flat, that can make a difference between you getting beaten and the inside. So you always tried to play within your game, try to play with technique. And I think that's kind of what carried me through and allowed me to be successful.
Yeah. Did you, it always seemed that you were so intelligent in the game too. There's like with that film study, just natural, or just, you always seem to be ahead of the game, both in planning when you go on the field.
Well, again, I had a great foundation laid for me in college in Michigan. You know, we when I was in school, when I got to Seattle, I found that there was a lot of similarities in the format of how you prepared for a game each week, what you looked for. Now, again, college is a little different than the NFL, but again, I had guys, Robbie Toback, 9-year vet, Chris Gray, he was 9-year vet. Walt had been around for three or four years. I had guys that have done it and done it the right way for so long that they taught me what to look for, how to study film. You can sit in a film room all day and look at film, but what are you actually getting out of it? What to look for? And I give a lot of credit to those older guys that taught me the right way.
Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL 53969. What was your favorite? Obviously, getting to the Super Bowl had to be one of your best memories. But what are some of your favorite Seahawk moments?
Yeah, I mean, the Super Bowl appearance was definitely the top one. I mean, you ask guys like Dan Marino. I mean, you get there and then you think you're going to get back, and for whatever reason it's just not automatic for a lot of guys. So that was definitely the top moment. But really, when you talk about favorite moments, it's really, as an offensive lineman, you get to the point where you do everything together as a group, you know, and those are the good ones, the guys that hang out together off the field, the guys whose families hang out and do things, you know, in the off season, and just kind of, you build that congeniality there. I mean, you build that cohesiveness. And I think, you know, there's millions of stories I have about, God, you know, us in the locker room. And you miss that. You miss being in the locker room. You miss the dog days of training camp when you're sitting there and it's hot and you're miserable and you're, you know, beat up. But you got each other to lean back on. And, you know, that stuff carries to today. I mean, I was in Seattle a couple weeks ago. And, you know, had dinner with Rob Toback, you know, and I talked to him, stay in touch with him on the phone pretty rarely, guys like that, Walt. And, yeah, it's just stuff that, you know, kind of transcends the game.
Now, of course, I remember when they put the transition tag on you, and I was at the combine at the time, and about 4 hours before something happened, I was telling Mike Holmgren what was going to happen, and he couldn't believe it, that you end up with a transition tag, kind of getting a poison pill type contract, going to the Minnesota Vikings. And I knew it was happening, and he was caught by surprise that it was happening. Was that experience, how unusual was that experience going through that? Because in many ways, it changed the way things
Yeah, it was pretty unusual from the top down. I mean, it was, for me, I was a fifth year guy in the league. I didn't know really much about contracts. I didn't know the nuances of them. But I did know that we weren't making very much headway between the organization and my representation during that last year, that year we went to the Super Bowl. And, Mike, obviously I've heard that story you just said about you kind of breaking the news to Mike at the combine. And I knew there was some miscommunication upstairs in that organization. At the end of the day, we weren't anywhere near where we thought we were going to be at that point. And so when Minnesota had offered what they offered, all those things. I mean, I had all my friends, we were settled in Seattle. It wasn't an easy decision, but at the end of the day, it was, hey, how many opportunities you get to do this? You like throwing a winning lottery ticket in a room with a hand. I mean, everybody can jump on it, right? So it was a hard decision. I'm glad I made it at the time. I'm still glad I made it. I had great experiences in both cities for both organizations. But it was definitely a not your average run of the mill situation.
No, because I remember too on the 2 years that Walter Jones was going through the franchise tag, and just how difficult that was. And of course, he was going to miss time until something was going to get close to camp. And I still remember the 1 year he came in after holding out, got there a week before camp, and then went through the season and didn't allow a sack, which was absolutely incredible.
Well, it's just, that's exactly why he was first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, Walt was, there's a lot of left tackles, great left tackles that play this game and over the years and through the decades and generations. But, when you see a guy like Walt, I mean, he, not only would he go through seasons and not give up a sack, but I mean, I don't really remember him losing too many one-on-one battles in practice. So you got to remember, I mean, for as many reps and pass protection as you get in a game, you get a lot more in practice. And he just, he was just one of those freak athletes, guy that's got the size and can move his feet like a DB and just has a knack for staying in between the defender and the quarterback.
If voted in, what would it mean to you to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I can even talk about how much that would mean. Obviously, when you start playing this game, you want to win a Super Bowl, and you do everything you can, and you hope you're on the team that has the opportunity to do that and play in the game, first of all, and then go ahead and win it. And I've got a lot of friends that played in Super Bowls, won Super Bowls, and they just describe the feeling as you can't really top it. Well, like I said earlier, I didn't have an opportunity to win one. So really the next best thing is when it comes down to it, in the ultimate team sport, when it comes down to as an individual and you're voted in the Hall of Fame, I think that means that you've done whatever you can as a player to help your team, give them the best chance to be successful. And it talks about how you're all the things, your work ethic, how you played on the field, obviously, but what kind of person you were, what kind of teammate, things like that. It's hard to describe, but it would put a little bit of closure to the fact that I didn't get a chance to win a Super Bowl, and it'd be the greatest honor I've ever, would ever have.
Seahawks fans still gnaw at the officiating things that happened during that game against Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl. As you're going through that game and you're seeing, second half, incredible drive by Matt Hasselbeck, and then you see all kind of crazy calls in that. What was it like on the field in that game?
Honestly, John, those games, you always hear people talk about, well, the regular season's one speed, and then you get to the first round of the playoffs, and then it seems like it picks up a little bit, and then every game you go move deeper into the playoffs, it gets faster and faster. I'll be honest with you, the Super Bowl was a blur. And when I try to go back and think about it, the thing that pops out of my mind is, you know, normally guys go out in the field, kind of stretch, warm up a couple hours before the game. But I just remember that that crowd was already huge. And, I mean, those flash bulbs were already going off an hour and a half before the game. And we're just still, we're walking around in shorts and a T-shirt. And I'm going, man, this is obviously a different level. And that game happened so fast. I remember the kickoff, and then the next thing I remember, it's halftime. And you go in, you try to make adjustments, and we thought we were moving the ball well, like you said. We had a couple breaks that we obviously didn't agree with in the first half that could have made the halftime situation a little different as far as the score. But then you come out in the second half, and you just try to keep it, you know, you just try to keep that game close. They hit a couple of big plays. You got to give your hat off to Pittsburgh. They hit a nice long run there, and then they hit a, you know, they got us on a, and I believe it was a reverse pass or Antoine Randall threw on a trick play. They threw the ball deep and scored on that one. But you'd like to see what would happen if some of those calls were different or the outcome of some of those plays in the first half and see what would happen if it, you know, came down to it a little closer at the wire.
Now, the great part is, I mean, you've retired from football, but you're still in football. You're working in the personnel office of the Tennessee Titans. How did that all transpire?
Well, so when you're done playing football, you hear all the old guys say, wow, your retirement, you're done. You have your August back. You get to go do stuff. You get a vacation, see your family. And as soon as I retired, you're right, it's great. And then like I said, I finished with the Titans. My wife and I are both from Florida. We have a lot of family in the Southeast. So to us, geographically, it made sense to just stay down here and be by family. So we kind of stayed in Tennessee. And then, you know, a year or two goes by after I retire, and I'm not, you know, as a player, you're used to kind of going at least 6-7 months out of the year full time, and then you get a couple months to relax. Well, that 12 months of doing nothing, it kind of eats at you. So I think my third year out, I joined Fox as a broadcaster for a college, and I did that for a fall. And, you know, I realized right away that although calling the games was fun and different, it was, you know, a big learning curve. But I realized that my favorite part about it was when you're talking on the phone with the coaches in the production meetings, and you're just talking ball. And then obviously the season ends at college in November, and then here you are, you got the whole winter and nothing really to do. And so when that season ended and I got done calling the games, you know, John Robinson had just kind of taken over as the GM of the Titans. And, you know, I had a bunch of friends call him, mutual friends, and kind of say, hey, give me a shot here. Let me try the, you know, I like talking football. Let me try the scouting deal. Being local, being in town here. And, so we did. We gave me a shot as a, you know, the NFL has an intern program for former players and personnel department. So I took that for that training camp, which would have been training camp of 2016. And then at the end of camp, John offered me a job being a pro scout. And so I stuck on that year, and then I renewed for this year. So it's great. I get to be involved with football. I get to keep up through the, you know, you stay in the loop with the guys that, and personnel people and coaches around the league that I've known for a number of years. And it's fun. It's definitely different when you're on this side of things as opposed to being a player, but it's just great to be involved with the game.
Now, as you look at the game right now, and obviously you played for a great offensive line in all your stops in that, how do you describe the state of offensive lines today in the National Football League overall?
Well, it's tricky. You know, I think that the college game itself is more geared towards is more geared towards the passing game. I think you see less of a pro style offense. There's certain schools that still run, you know, utilize a fullback and will you know utilize 21 personnel and run the ball. You know, your Stanford's, your whether it be, you know, two tight ends or a fullback and a tight end and you know, the your Wisconsin's, your LSU's, your Arkansas's. There are teams that still, you know, get down in three-point stance and try to run the ball north and south. But in college football in general has become a passing league, and the spread has kind of taken over, and it's become the new norm. And I think, and not so much even in college, that it's at the high school level too. So you have guys that start playing football. The only way, you know, they learn playing football out of a 2-point stance, offensive line speaking, 2-point stance in high school. Don't very rarely get into a 3-point stance, if ever. They go to college, they play in the same system. Not only is the system different, but the verbiage is different. You know, there's the days of, you know, lining up and, you know, where we had to learn, you know, Brown right, A right, 322, Y stick, Z hammer is a play. And for a young quarterback and for offensive linemen who are, you know, used to seeing plays on big, you know, poster boards on the sidelines and having wristbands with colors and just like a name of an animal as a play, and that means a play. You know, there's a big transition. And so what happens is you get guys, and then coupled with the fact that the off-season program has been shortened, the days of the amount of times you can have contact, the amount of practices you can have contact has been shortened. So you're trying to teach a guy really a whole different style of football with minimal reps. And, you know, the way the preseason works now, most young guys only get those reps in that maybe the second preseason game, the second half, and then the fourth game. So they're evaluated on that. And what you see is you see guys not having the same skill sets or the abilities. Now athletically, I think that's getting better every year. But as far as the ability to actually play this style of football that the NFL is accustomed to playing, and the style of offense, I think that's kind of lacking a little bit.
I tell you what, Steve, it's great catching up with you. Best of luck in the Hall of Fame. I hope everything goes well there. Also, best of luck with the Titans this season. And, hey, looking forward to seeing you down the road here soon.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.